With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Best in the World podcast with Richard Parr.
Well, hello there. I'm Richard Parr. That means you are listening to The Best in the World with Richard Parr. Yes, every week I speak to an Olympic champion, a world record holder, or a world number one to find out what they do differently from the rest of us average Joes, or even the silver medalists. We want to know what makes a champion. What are those 1% different things that these people are doing to be the very best in their sports, the very best in their fields? This week, I speak to Philip Dutton. He's a two-time Olympic gold medalist in eventing, and we cover a whole range of topics with Philip on this week's program. In particular, we talk about how he went from competing for Australia to competing for America and why he made that decision. We also talk about his bond with his horses and the team around him and how he finds people to make a strong team, an Olympic winning team. We talk about all of his different Olympic experiences. Plus, we also talk about how he's able to attract sponsors. And I think that's something that we all have to think about in our everyday life, but also for athletes as well who are trying to just focus on being the very best. And we learn all of that with Philip Dutton on this week's Best in the World with Richard Parr. Just before I get to the conversation with Philip, I want to tell you about 99 Designs. 99 Designs helped design the Sportacino logo. Of course, The Best in the World with Richard Parr is part of the Sportacino network. And I think if you've seen the Sportacino logo, you'll think, oh, that's actually pretty good. And 99 Designs could design a logo for you. They could design a website for you. They could design a flyer for you. Go and check them out. I'm going to put a link to it on this podcast. There's also a link to it on the resources page of sportacino.com. Go and check that out. And what they do is they offer it to talented freelancers all around the world. And if you don't like what they provide for you, then you can get your money back. Go and check it out, 99 Designs. Let me know what you think. It is a product that we have used here at Sportacino. All right, let's start our conversation with the two-time Olympic gold medalist. It's time to speak to Philip Dutton.
The Best in the World podcast with Richard Parr.
Philip Dutton, welcome to The Best in the World with Richard Parr, two-time Olympic gold medalist in eventing. It's so great to have you on the program. Let's start from the very beginning, Philip. How did you first get involved with horses and horse riding and eventing?
Well, I grew up on a sheep and cattle farm in Australia, in the outback, and so horses were a part of my everyday life right from being a kid and being in pony club, but also, we use the horses to help with the work with the sheep and cattle. So as long as I can remember, I've been, around horses and riding them and kind of eventing, being sort of the all-round horseman sport. It was kind of a natural fit for me to drift towards that.
Yeah, did you realize, at what age do you think you realized that this was going to be your life, that you were going to try and compete at an Olympic level?
Well, I mean, I certainly, I had always dreamed about that as a kid, but I never ever thought I'd ever get to that level, you know. It's one thing dreaming about it, but then putting it into practice. And it wasn't until later on in life, after college, I went back and worked on the farm with my family for a while. And, you know, we went through a bit of a difficult economic time. And so in my sort of mid-20s, I moved to America and left the farm and decided to pursue my writing career full time. And that's when I started to, you know, fully realize that, you know, there's a chance I could really, you know, be at the top of the sport and get to the Olympics then.
Why America, Philip?
Well, I wish I had a, you know, a great answer for you that I'd research everywhere in the world. But I think, you know, somebody once said to me that for an hour worked anywhere in the world, you'll get more reward for it in America. And that always stuck with me. And, you know, so I'd always kept that in mind. And I didn't have any money to fund my career, so I had to work as well. And I chose America with the idea that, you know, the main big players in our sport are in England and Germany. And so the idea being that I'd start in America and then possibly move on to England afterwards. But 25 years later, I'm still here.
Yeah, I would say the weather's nicer in America, but I'm not sure it's that much nicer in Pennsylvania, is it? Is that where you're mainly based?
Yeah, so we, you know, our home is in Pennsylvania. My kids go to school here. We also have a farm in South Carolina. So during the winter months, the horses move down there. And so we temporarily live in the south because it's a bit warmer and easier on the horses and to be able to get what we need to get done rather than during the winter in Pennsylvania.
Of course, your first gold medal was at the 1996 Olympics in Atlanta. Having been based in the States for many years at that point, did that help at all?
Yeah, it certainly didn't hurt. I mean, I was kind of a bit of a nobody over here. You know, I hadn't been here that long. And so I think that opened everybody's eyes up to, you know, somebody that, well, obviously I represented Australia then, but I was based here and I did all my training here in the US. So, yes, that kind of put me on the map and gave me a good kickstart in this country.
How was that first experience for you, Philip?
Well, I mean, it's unbelievable to, you know, like I said, as a young kid, I had obviously dreamed about going to the Olympics. And, you know, for eventing, it's not a big international sport like, you know, soccer or, you know, baseball or whatever. And so for the eventing to be in the Olympics and to be broadcast throughout the world is pretty cool. And, you know, to be able to, obviously the ultimate is to stand up there on the podium and, you know, hear your national anthem is, you know, it doesn't get any better in our sport. And, you know, just my family were at home in Australia and they were all watching it live. And, you know, to be able to call back once, you know, just as soon as I got off the podium and call and talk to my parents and family, it was really neat to become a, you know, a bit of a hero overnight, which was pretty cool.
Were there any nerves?
Yeah, there's always plenty of nerves. There's nothing wrong with nerves as long as you direct them in the right way. And, but, yeah, it seems such a long time ago, but that was, you know, it was a great Olympics for this country as well. And, you know, it was kind of down the road, like 12 hours down the road from Pennsylvania, but it was like a home Olympics as well.
Is there anything that you know now that you wish you were able to tell Philip Dutton 20 years ago?
Well, I think, you know, I've always been driven and, you know, desperate to get to the next level and always trying to improve. I probably would tell myself to slow down a bit because, you know, a lot of times taking your time is the quickest way to get there. And sometimes I think I've rushed things a little bit too much. But on the flip side of that, I keep pushing myself, which I think keeps you improving as well.
Mm. Give us an idea then, Philip, of what your typical training day is these days. When you say you slowed things down, what is a typical day in your life actually, Philip?
Well, when I talk about slowing down, is as in not aiming, like not a steeper projection in how you're trying to get to the goals with the horses. You know, maybe taking an extra 6 months to get there, rather than pushing things quite as much. But well, my normal day is usually get the kids to school and then start to ride after that. And you know, I'm in a situation where obviously we have to make a living as well, so you know, I do a lot of teaching, and so generally I ride all my horses in the morning, or the ones that I am concentrating on that day. So that probably is anywhere from 5 to 8 horses.
Oh wow.
And then usually I start to teach in the afternoons, so around 1 o'clock I start to teach through till, you know, about 4:30 probably. But there's no real average day, certainly. I compete every weekend, usually from February through till November. And the horses, you know, they're not the same horses that compete each weekend. So, for example, the horses that I rode last weekend will not go out again for another couple of weeks. So they'll have a bit of an easier week. And I'm now concentrating on the horses that will be competing this weekend. And so it's constantly a juggle of where you put your time and your energy and your priority that day. And
that must take a lot of planning, Philip.
Yeah, there's a lot of planning going into it. Certainly the horses' careers, you know, I'm sort of looking now at horses that, you know, would be in line for Tokyo, and certainly it's a long way off and things change, but you do have to plan ahead. And, you know, the competitions you want that be a great experience for the horse. And so, you know, you want to be prepared for it as well. You don't want to take the horse there and he, you know, is not really ready for what what the competition's asking him. So yes, there is a lot of planning going into it, and it takes a big teamwork as well. You know, like certainly I can ride the horse and that kind of stuff, but there's the veterinary care, there's the grooming care, there's the people that own the horses, and you know, so there's a lot goes into a good performance.
Have you ever made the wrong decision on which horse to use for a certain competition? Like, have your emotions ever kind of taken over from you, from potentially there's one horse who might be better for one competition, but you just feel you've got a better bond with another horse? Has that ever happened?
Yeah, you certainly, you know, in a way, it's human nature. You bond a little bit better with some horses, and but I try to, you know, I can't think of an example where I wish I'd taken another horse, but you know, each horse is an individual, and each competition's individual, and you know, you never quite know how the competition's going to turn out as well. You know, for example, being an outdoor sport, if it rains, you know, the cross country becomes a lot more difficult. Certainly when you go to the Olympics, nobody's ever jumped the cross country before. So you can't, you don't know what it's going to ride like and what horse would be more suited to it. So there is an element of, you know, a little bit of luck and what horse you turn up there on the day. But generally, if they train well, good horse, they will adjust to the competition that you have.
The Best in the World podcast with Richard Parr.
Just going to pause the conversation with Philip Dutton for a moment, because I want to tell you about Audible. Audible is one of the leading suppliers of audiobooks in the world. Yes, the world. over 180,000 titles for you to choose from. It's a product I personally use. I've listened to lots of different audiobooks. Really enjoyed Boris Johnson's book about Winston Churchill. Also, really like listening to Yes by Daniel Bryan. I've got a few locked and loaded in my Audible app as well, ready to listen to. And you can too, for free. Yes, you can get one free audiobook download, and that's part of a 30-day free trial. And all you've got to do is go to audibletrial.com/best. That's audibletrial.com/best to check it out for free. Let me know how you get on with it. Send me a tweet at Richard_Parr. I would love to hear from you. Go and try out Audible. All right, let's return to the conversation with the two-time Olympic champion in eventing. It's Philip Dutton.
The Best in the World podcast with Richard Parr.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Now, one of the questions I very often ask on this program, Philip, is about nutrition. And I am going to ask you about what's in your diet and if you have to keep strict on your diet. But I'd also be interested because some of the people I've had on the program have said, oh, in the last 20, 25 years, we've learned a lot more about nutrition, what we can and what we can't eat. Can the same be said for horses? Has there been greater knowledge about what you can feed them to compete?
Oh, absolutely, yes. There's a lot of research goes into feeding a horse and when to feed a horse. And, you know, they're obviously a lot different to humans, the way they digest their food. And they're a grazing animal, which means, you know, they're better off not having like three big meals. They're better off having four or five smaller meals because that's how their stomach adjusts and breaks down the food better. But yes, every horse is an individual and every horse reacts differently, just the same as we do. You know, some horses put on weight much easier, some hard to get weight on. You know, this is a whole big topic. Stomach ulcers are something that we always keep track on, and fatigue, and there's lots of different feed companies, specialty feeds for different horses, and you know, the ration part of it is a huge part of getting good performance out of your horse.
It sounds like you've got a lot to think about, Philip. You've got to think about when you're going to rest the horses, when you're going to make them compete, what you've got to feed them, and that's not even thinking about what you have to do. How do you find the right people to help build that team? Because obviously you must rely so much on them.
Yes, and that's one of the keys. It's a bit like building a farm team, or you need to get people around you, and that you can't really do that by just turning up and you know, hiring people, it takes years and years of, you know, getting the trust of somebody. And a lot of times it's better off starting with somebody a bit inexperienced and, you know, working together that way and, you know, teaching and helping that person, you know, become what you want. And then the same as the people that own the horses, you know, that they've got to trust you that you're doing a good job every day and that you're, you know, training the horse well and that you're making the right decisions. Then you have farriers, the guys that put the shoes on the horses, and then you have the veterinarians. And so it is a complete team of that. Once you get to the competition, you know, I get to ride the horse, but there's a whole team that gets you there.
Speaking of riding horses, we know that you got another gold medal in 2000. How did that games compare to Atlanta for you?
Well, you know, to go back to Australia and go there in Sydney was as good as it gets. I mean, I think everybody that I've ever grown up with and knew drove to Sydney or flew to Sydney to watch those Olympics. And so it was kind of a reunion and a celebration and but obviously not during it. And, you know, Australia pulled off a magnificent Olympics there in Sydney. And so I was just proud to be Australian as well, to be a part of it. And then obviously for our team to win a gold medal, it was an incredible experience and something that you know, you can never forget anything like that.
You must be one of the few people, Philip, who have effectively had two home Olympics in a row. with Atlanta and Sydney. You, of course, then made the decision to represent the United States, and you did that at the 2008 Games. What made you make that decision?
Well, I mean, I'd been in America a long time, and, you know, talking about the team that gets you there to the competitions, all the horses that I had were all American-owned, and, you know, they were all people that were supporting me, but obviously the national anthem was the Australian national anthem that would play whenever you know, I did well. And so, and added to that, you know, my wife's American and we had three kids as well, and I was very much a part of the eventing scene in America, and I just felt that it was the right thing to do. And it was a very hard decision to call my mum and dad and let them know that's what I decided to do. But they totally understood and took it well. And, you know, it was very hard to talk to, you know, my coaches that had helped me with Australia for a long time. But everybody was very understanding about it. And, you know, I think I've taken it as good as could be expected.
Oh, well, that's good. And of course, you are an important part of the eventing community. And I know you're a founding member of the Eventer Riders Association of North America and a former president. How did that get started? And what was the thought behind it at the time?
Well, you know, traditionally the riding in this country, you know, has been, you know, more amateur based, you know, basically guys or girls ride, you know, for a while after college, and then sort of mum and dad maybe helped pay for it, and then they'd sort of give up and then take on a more regular job afterwards. And now the sport's grown so much that there's, you know, people like myself in the sport that can keep going later on in their careers and also make a living from it. And so it was felt that we needed a united voice that we could have influence on the sport in a positive way that was coming from the riders and riders' point of view, and from a, you know, somebody who was in the sport and making a living from the sport as well. And not to say that we, you know, had to change too much, but it was good to give another perspective when competitions have been run or decisions have been made or rule changes have been made. And it's also good to for the riders to have an ally. If something was, you know, not done right, we could all band together and get behind that rider. So it was kind of just a support group for the riders and to be able to contribute to the sport from a rider's point of view.
Fantastic. And you mentioned when you went to the United States, you didn't have much money and you were going to become professional. And when I looked on your website, you've got a big list of sponsors right now. And you were speaking about that with the Riders Association there. How difficult is it to attract sponsors? And is there anything in particular you do?
Well, I mean, again, I think it's over time. I mean, I try to look at it from a sponsor's point of view. What are they getting, you know, by getting behind Philip Dutton or whether it's anybody else, you know? And so you have to come up with something that they will help them promote, you know, whether it's, you know, having a sign on your truck or every time you get interviewed, you have their cap on, or, you know, there's different ways of doing it. Obviously, the social media now is huge, and you know, the amount of followers you can get, and which you know, so there's all different ways. But I think ultimately you've got to look at, you know, what you can do for them and how you can help promote their company or help their image or, you know, whatever. I think that's the best way to look at it. And obviously we're not a huge sport, but now with you know, live streaming and that kind of thing, there are opportunities where you can appeal to a much broader crowd rather than the people that just come in to watch physically. You know, there's a lot of people can watch the sport, you know, online or whatever. And so there is opportunities now for companies or brands to get behind, you know, some riders that are normally wouldn't appeal to that bigger audience.
Well, I hope you're not wearing a sponsored hat now, as obviously this is an audio podcast. If you are, do you want to give a shout out to the sponsor?
Yeah, that's okay. I mean, I think we're doing pretty well for them. But yeah, I mean, my longest serving one has been Cosequin, which is a joint supplement for humans and horses. And it's been a great company for me because the product is so good. So I'm always very proud to be a part of what they do, and it's helped my horses along as well, and me for that matter.
Fantastic. And of course they're sponsoring a man now who not only has Olympic medals in team eventing but also an individual medal. How did that feel when you won that bronze at the Rio Games?
Yeah, so it was so rewarding, and you know, to be quite honest, it was a little bit of a shock for us because like I mentioned before, we didn't generally, the Olympic Games, the cross country hasn't, for the last probably, you know, four Olympics, the cross country hasn't played a major part in the standings. You know, it has been a little bit easier. And so we were thinking that going into Rio, and generally we're thinking that as from a team point of view, we had more chance of getting a team medal than an individual medal. And, you know, as the stars lined up, the horse I took was an incredible cross-country horse, and you know, as it turned out, the cross-country became a major part of the competition and actually, you know, really sorted out the final standings. And I was able to I did a dressage test without being, you know, right up there, and then after the cross-country I moved way up the standings. And so it was kind of a shock, and our team, the American team, did not do that well. So for part of the Olympics, there was some disappointment because as a team we weren't doing well. And then on the final day of the competition, I was in fourth place, and then you know, I would have been on top of the world and very excited and very happy to have ended up fourth. And then after the final show jumping around, I moved up to third. So it was a big shock to me, and you know, something that I was so proud of my horse as well, because Mighty Nice had been with me for quite a long time, and was a you know, you touched on which horse is a favourite or what, and he's obviously been a favourite of mine. And he was owned by a dear friend who had passed away a year and a half before. So it was kind of this fairy tale Olympics for me anyway.
Well, I think that's a beautiful way to wrap up this program, because I think that's a lovely story, and I think it's a great congratulations to you all for doing that. Before we go, Philip, why don't you let us know how we can find out more about your farms and everything you do, and we can continue to follow you on the internet and on social media, please.
Just go to philipdutton.com, and there'll be links there to my website and everything else that we need to get as much information as you want there, I think.
Perfect. Well, thank you for being on the program. We've definitely learned a lot from you. Philip Dutton, thank you for being the best in the world.
Thank you, Richard.
The Best in the World podcast with Richard Parr.
Really good to speak to Philip over in the United States. We've also had another American eventer on the program before. Perhaps you want to go back and listen to the conversation with Beezy Madden. I really enjoyed the chat with her. I've also spoken to another person from the world of equestrianism, Lucinda Fredericks. They're all at acast.com/best. And they're obviously all at iTunes as well. And if you haven't already, please press that subscribe button. It really means a lot to me. And give me a rating and review. I would love it if you could just spend a few moments doing that. And we've had so many great guests on the program. There might be other stars that you wish to learn from who might not necessarily be in the sports that you particularly like. Someone I'm thinking of off the top of my head could be the triathlon Olympic champion, Emma Snowsill, maybe the track cycling champion, Callum Skinner. We've also spoken to Connor Fields, the BMX Olympic champion. You might remember him from the Rio Games. I also enjoyed the chat with the rowing Olympic champion, Matt Langridge. They're all on the Best in the World with Richard Parr. Go and check them out. Press that subscription button on iTunes. I would really appreciate it if you would do that. All right, next week, we're going to learn from another Olympic champion, world record holder, or world number one, because that's what we do. We want to get a little bit smarter by learning from the very best. All right, I've been Richard Parr. You've been listening to the Best in the World, and I'll see you next week. Goodbye.
The Best in the World podcast with Richard Parr. Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.